This is Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank Fantasy Flight Games for our hobby and their continued support, Drew Dallas at Card Game DB for our hosting, and the AGOT community as a whole for making this possible. Let us take you beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we're going to be doing a small introduction where we're going to discuss some of the new FFG news and our ongoing contest. We're going to have a deck building segment today with a bit of a twist and a tourney report, of course, based on that deck, followed by some closing comments.
So this is episode 7. We're actually recording a little earlier in the week, so there may be more news that we don't get a chance to cover, but we're recording the day that there's some new FFG news, right, John?
Some really exciting new FFG news. Regional's been announced, and we have some dates and some times for the U.S., but not for international regionals yet.
Now, it's worth noting that for the Canadian and the U.K. regionals, the dates have unofficially made their way through the grapevine. I do have those dates, I do have those locations at least, and dates for the UK ones posted on the Beyond the Wall Facebook group. Any surprises at the US ones for you, John?
No, there wasn't any big surprises.
I thought the best part of that article was the line right at the bottom.
65 other people like this.
No.
No, I'm joking. No, the FAQ and tournament rules will be updated in early April.
I'm messing with you. I'm glad that we have a sort of warning on when this change is going to be coming, and I'm looking forward to the FAQ. I think we'll have to do an episode about that in the next 2 weeks.
I think it's great that we know, you know, ahead of time a little bit when we can expect the FAQ and the new tournament rules. I think this is probably a good time also to remind our listeners, that we have a competition going on. So do you want to tell everyone about the competition again, Alex, just to jog their memory?
Yeah. So for those of you who did not listen to our episode last week, you're making terrible life choices, because our episode last week was an interview with Nate French, who came on to talk to us about game design. And we enjoyed doing it so much that we convinced him. Well, we begged him, really. I don't know if we did any convincing.
I was actually on my knees when I was talking. You couldn't see it on Skype, but I was on my knees.
So Nate actually, he agreed to come back on the cast, but he set a challenge to the community. And the challenge was that he would come back on the cast if somebody won an organized play event with Conquest or Defiance as their agenda. Yeah.
So even more than that, he said he would answer a question from that person as long as FFG let them.
Yeah, we have to pre-screen it. You know, these agendas just came out. People are thinking of ideas to play them. This might be an incentive to give it a whirl. Let's see what we can do with it.
So today we're joined by guest Jensen22. He wrote to us, and we found out that he has a tournament going on March 8th. Now, you will be listening to this cast after that tournament. And we wanted to build a deck for Jensen22 to take to this tournament. And actually, I'm going to try to attend the tournament on the same day and play that exact same deck. But we want him to decide on most of the themes, and we're going to work together as a group to build the deck. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the tournament, Jensen, what you expect to see there, and maybe yourself in general.
I'm fairly new at the competitive scene, so I've only played in like 4 tournaments. I did go to Worlds last year, and I guess for me, my issue with deck building is that I don't log as many games as most people. So when you're looking at cards, you know, and reading them, they sound great, but then putting them into practice always tends to be a bit of an issue. As far as this upcoming tournament, the last one I attended in February, there was a lot of Lanny, Power Behind the Throne mostly, some Baron Knights of the Hollow Hill, the annoying Bloodthirst character list was there, and Greyjoy Black Sails ended up winning it. I'm anticipating to see a lot of Lanny because a lot of the discussion was towards Lanny and how OP it seemed.
Did you have a deck preference or a house preference?
You know, one thing that I never see around here is Burn.
Yeah, I mean, I built a Summer Burn with Tiny on a different podcast, so if we were moving to Targa, I would suggest a House of Dreams, just because it's a little different.
I'm cool with that.
Now, the one thing that I would be worried about a little bit is with all of the Knights of the Hollow Hill, a lot of them are playing like Rally Kai and City Plots and stuff that could get rid of your Dragon Pit. So House of Dreams has a little bit less value in the current meta than it would normally. It would match up very well against Lannister and the other decks you mentioned in your meta. So it might be a good meta call. Generally, I think it's going to have a hard time against Targ Knights of the Hollow Hill, Martell Knights of the Hollow Hill. So if you expect a lot of that, then maybe it's not a good call. But you don't expect a lot of that, do you?
No, not really.
All right. Well, let's do that. Let's build a
House Targaryen, House of Dreams. I'm up for that. So one of the first considerations with House of Dream is you're already limiting your setup somewhat. So you can go one of two ways at that point, I think. You can either sort of play it the Hollow Hill route, where you're going to use some plots that are going to let you overcome that weak setup, or you can push for a stronger setup by using something like the Refugees as your restricted.
Personally, I like the City Plots because I like being able to start the cycle, and I think the City Plots give us late game control. However, I've seen the other side where they play like really expensive characters, lots of gold. But really, if you look at City of Lies and you get two cards in Shadows, it's almost like a 7-gold plot. It's very close to opening with 8-gold.
And it's guaranteed, even in a Hollow Hill matchup.
City Plots sound like the way to go, because if there's not much control, I might take everybody by surprise with that.
We can start to fill out the plot deck then already. So you're essentially most of the time going to be opening with City of Lies, as long as you have one Shadows card in hand, basically. Because that's your starter, with, you know, a few exceptions. Maybe against Noble Cause, you might open with a Valor.
I hear Valor, City of Lies. Let's put those two in right now. And since we're running City of Lies, that automatically makes me think I'm going to run at least City of Soldiers and City of Sin, because they're just so good. City of Soldiers, especially in a Targ deck where you might be able to reduce the strength of someone and then finish them off with the City of Soldiers, I really like that plot.
Yeah, I think definitely City of Soldiers.
I think the big question here is going to be whether we want to run City of Spiders as well in the deck to be able to copy an effect. And we have some good effects to copy, right? We can copy City of Sin, we can copy City of Soldiers, we can copy City of Lies if we have a bunch of Shadow cards in hand. However, it's always that 1 gold. It does have a nice 2 claim, though.
One of the main decision points there is whether you're going to run Besieged as well.
I like Besieged, especially because if I run into Pentoshi at all.
Well, Pentoshi's not as bad as you'd think for this deck because it doesn't need to win challenges as often.
What's going to cause problems for us from this deck as a location? Goldtooth Mines, probably. Stuff that would give our opponent draw we'd want to stop, I think. But other than that, what else?
Well, in the Bloodthirst matchup, you're going to want to get rid of that Meraxes.
I would agree with that as well.
What are the location hate can we run? We can run Condemned by the Council.
We could run Pyromancer's Apprentice. No one would expect it. It's a Shadows card. You have tons of Shadow cards.
But the Bloodthirst tend to be sitting on a gold or two.
Yeah, you're right. For the Bloodthirst matchup, if we're expecting Bloodthirst, I might actually side with Alex that using something like City Besiege would be worthwhile.
Especially if you have the flexibility of being able to copy it with City of Spiders so you can hit things as well.
Oh, so now you're thinking of running City Besiege and City of Spiders, filling all but one of our plots.
Well, the last one would probably be Threat from the North.
I like to run March from the Wall in these types of decks.
Then I'd almost be tempted to drop Valor for Threat and put March as the 7th and try that as a build. Because
running no Valor, huh?
Why no Valor?
I don't know, because Threat can almost do the same thing on a whole bunch of weenies, and March will almost do the same thing if he has very few characters. It's not quite the same.
So then, are you saying ditch City Besieged?
I think what you're really trying to decide is between Threat, Val, City of Spiders, City Besieged. We're going to be running City of Soldiers for sure, City of Lies for sure, City of Sin for sure. And then you got Marched. If you're worried about big, massive armies that you can't burn down for some reason, you can have Marched to the Wall to get rid of them. It also works great on those Hyper Vipers that you see out of Bloodthirst because, you know, they play Nobles Can't Be Killed, and you go, that's great, he's discarded, he's still gone. You know, we don't have to run City of Spiders. We don't have to copy some of our old City Plots. We can just run City Besieged and be happy. What do you want to do, James?
So without City Besieged, we'd be forced to go Condemned by the Council, Paramanor's Apprentice.
Something like that, yeah.
So let's ditch City Besieged for now and go with Spiders.
All right. And then that means we'll have Threat for the North, March to the Wall, and Valor Mogulis as our other plots, giving us 7. Let's start with that. Sounds good.
One thing that I always stumble with, I tend to come up with a deck idea and then start throwing everything in it and then get distracted by the theme to a certain extent. So if you're running, you know, Dragon Pit, like, what's a good number of Shadows cards to shoot for?
Say slightly upwards of 12. Might be as high as 16 or so. I'd do a couple of test runs and see how often I could get the City of Lies working.
Yeah, I think around 12 to 14 will let you trigger that City of Lies first turn most of the time. And I think that's what you really want to do. So let's throw together some Shadow cards. I think we're all going to agree that we have to have at least two Sir Jamies, right? And with him, we're going to want at least one Greenfield. We can come back and add more, but...
It's worth keeping in mind, even if you lose one, you can still put the second copy into Shadows, and you're still getting a benefit out of it from the Dragon Pit itself. However, we don't have as many effects that trigger off things coming out of Shadows in this deck, so I'm okay with one Preston for now.
Yeah, just to start. And then, I mean, I'd fill out the rest of the King's card. So I'd get Sir Boris Blunt. He's zero cost to come out. He gives plus one strength, which can really make a big difference, actually, in this type of deck, I think, since your opponent's already at minus one strength. And then because you mentioned you expect a lot of Lannister, I think we should include a Sir Aerys Okart just to be able to stand those key characters maybe.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
I mean, one of the first things I like to do when we're building this out, I mean, we're starting with the Shadows here, but is to make sure that we've entirely fleshed out our draw engine. And in Targ, that's not a huge amount of options. We've got Jaime. We could get King's Landing if we're going to have enough King's Landing locations. We can get Meraxes. We can get Jogo. And we can get Maggie Crone. And those are basically our only options that are our only viable options.
I think we'll have enough King's Landing. The Dragon Pit itself is a King's Landing location, and it should be in play for sure.
Actually, we should start with that. Are we putting two copies of that in? I tend to like the idea of two copies.
I like that just for protection.
Other King's Landings coming up, Twilight Micret. It's limited. Maybe throw at least one in.
Kingdom of Shadows, while we're in the locations. We need at least two copies of Kingdom of Shadows. I don't know if, John, if you feel like it's a three copy.
I think it's a three. I mean, that's a nice stand effect. I think we want to run that at three.
Gold definitely helps, too, with the low city plots.
This is where I have to, for me, I have to make the decision. I have to say, what is the influence base I'm looking for? Are we planning on running Forever Burning? Are we planning on running Incinerate? Or are we planning on starting to run Flamekissed, where we need two influence to pay for it? Because that will change our location base significantly.
Well, I don't think it'll change the fact that we're going to put at least one Meraxes in.
That's true. I can't see us not putting a Meraxes in. I can't see us not putting in Attorney Grounds.
I agree. I mean, we got a lot of options. Incinerate, for instance, is reasonably good if we go heavy allies. Hatchling's Beast is still an option because we haven't used a restricted card. Aegon's Hill is possible, but it's not restricted, so it doesn't really matter. But it's just possible that against certain decks you don't want the Dragon Pit. Against a Hollow Hill deck you might want the Aegon's Hill as the option.
I think we want to put one Aegon's Hill in there. I think against Bloodthirst, we're probably better to get the Hill and just drop their Viper out of their hand.
Yeah, if you're expecting a lot of Bloodthirst or Baron Knights of the Hollow Hill, putting our armies in the dead pile can make a big difference rather than in the discard pile.
Yeah, I'm digging Aegon's Hill.
The advantage is that against certain decks you can say, look, I'm going to start with Aegon's Hill instead. Because the Dragon Pit is going to do so little for me.
So where would you make that distinction? Where would you go with Aegon's over Dragon Pit?
Generally, if they're going to have few characters on the board.
So Bloodthirst, definitely.
Bloodthirst, definitely. Most Hollow Hill decks. A Greyjoy character light deck. Anything where you don't think you're going to be able to burn a lot. It's sort of like if Threat from the North is going to wipe a couple of characters, then Dragon Pit is even better. But if he's going to play 2 6 strength characters... Or 1 11 strength character, then being able to pick that character out of his hand will be better every time. And being able to look at his hand will be much more important.
Being able to kneel that and take out like a Beric Dondarrion that they're doing Super Beric with or a Viper can be just game winning. Would you say every Hollow Hill matchup you'd actually get Aegon's Hill, Alex?
Right now, yes.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, every Hollow Hill matchup.
So basically anytime you see a Bloodthirst or a Hollow Hill, I would just start with Aegon's Hill as my House of Dreams.
Okay. So you'd even go that way with Baron Knights of the Hollow Hill?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, every time you use that, you'll delay them a turn, while otherwise you don't get as much kick out of it.
Now, remember that some of their ability to move cards from their dead pile into their discard is actually character-based, too. So you can burn those characters out.
Yeah, Shy Initiate.
Yeah,
exactly. And if you burn them out before they can use them, because you're a Shadow Action, for instance, and you burn them out because their strength is low, you still get to keep using that Aegon's Hill, and it will just totally demolish those decks.
Okay. So I've been playing around with that Trait Manipulation deck a little bit, and the recursion that's in it for attachments with, is it Dany's Chamber?
Yep.
Lady Dany's Chambers, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty sick. I mean, when you go hard, do you focus more towards events for your burn or attachments? Like, obviously, Flame Kissed is an auto-include, but...
The problem with Lady Danny's Chambers is not only is our gold for location starting to look really, really high, but it's only from playing a Targaryen character, not pulling one out of shadows. So generally, you can't rely on being able to cycle those attachments quite as reliably as you can on another deck.
Okay.
Now, our location base is looking very expensive right now. We're going to have to keep that in mind, because that's going to tone down our setups considerably.
Well, maybe we might actually want to look at the refugees as they're restricted at that point. If we think we're worried about setups, the best way to get better setups is to have a zero cost. I don't think we've, like, from what we're talking about here, I don't feel like we're going to have the influence required to run a Hatchling's Feast. And for me, that would be the other restricted we would think about. We might get more draw off the refugees if they attack with Jogo.
Yeah, I'd be leaning that way as well.
I'm going to put three refugees in. I'm going to throw Brownbend Plum because he's zero cost and awesome. And I'm going to put Shadow Parasite in because I really like the Shadow Parasite in this type of deck where we're going to bring things out of shadows.
Shadow Parasites are cheap, which cannot be underestimated here. I like that. And so definitely a Jogo as well then.
Yes.
We really want to get the draw. Just one copy, though, probably. We don't have a way to keep him on the board.
All right. Since we're talking about characters, I think a central character to every shadow-based burn is King Landing Assassin. I think we should run three of him.
We probably do need the character more than we need, say, Dragon Skull as an attachment, because we don't have a way to cycle it.
What would you want to add at this point, James?
What about, is it Magister Illyrio?
That's a good call, actually. I like that. With the shadows coming in, you know, maybe we have a King's Landing Assassin, give -2. We got -1 from the Dragon Pit, another -1 from Magister Illyrio. Might even just kill small guys as people come out of shadows. I think we have to run at least one. That's a good call.
I definitely like Young Griff.
I think he's worth having.
And he stands, right? Like, and that's, again, you were saying that one of the things you were worried about is Lannister. So
a copy of Young Griff is not a bad idea.
So I'm sitting at about 18 characters right now.
Yep, I'm at the same as you. I'm not convinced on three King's Landing Assassins. I'm going to see where our Shadows curves is before I argue with John about pulling that down to 2.
And it'll be an argument, because he's awesome. We didn't decide to run any land destruction, so we need some here. So I think this is where we probably throw in maybe a Warlock of Karth and a Pyromantis Apprentice to start, to have at least 2 ways to deal with locations.
Well, it's that or Condemned. Depends whether you're worried about Shadows locations or not.
Honestly, I think I'd rather...
Actually, can you use Condemned on your own locations if they got Frozen Solid?
If you could win an intrigue against yourself.
By a losing opponent. Okay, now I had to double check. I'm like, that might actually be a pretty neat additional trick you could pull off.
The Warlock of Karth we could actually use on our own locations. And he's deadly.
Yeah, that sounds pretty solid, especially for Shadows count gets up there that high.
And we're currently running 2 Claim 2 plots?
Yep.
Yeah, I can see Warlock of Karth. The reason I ask about the Claim 2s is if you're going to bounce a location to its hand and you have a character with an intrigue icon, you can typically do that on a turn where you're going to discard 2 locations from hand, or 2 things from hand, and probably pull that location away permanently.
Gotcha.
So it's just one of those for now?
Just one of those for now, yeah.
So now, this is another spot. When I build a deck by myself, I'm always looking at this, and I start looking at, now that we have so many shadows, I kind of branch off and try to figure out how I can get them back into shadows. And oftentimes, you know, it leads to, like, Cape Wrath, stuff like that. Going out of house like that, do you do that often?
I don't. And then John convinces me to, and he's usually right. But it's typically only for if you have a specific problem you're trying to answer, where the opponent has this deck, this type, and you need an answer to that. It's not generally for efficiency, because the cost is too high.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I would think of using to get stuff back in shadows would be using, like, maybe the Targ character, that when you play him, you bounce another character back to your hand. Even then, I don't feel like it's something we need, because we should... I think I want to add more shadows. Like, I have a couple more shadows that I'd like to try to convince you guys to add. So, to me, I think we're probably going to have so many shadows, we should be good. We'll have a nice pool going. We wouldn't have to worry about it. And since we're talking about the shadows, I want to add, I love Ferris.
Yeah.
Discard an ally. Especially since you said there would be a lot of Lanny. And a card that I find a lot of people underestimate and is really powerful in this type of deck is Free City Mercenaries. Big gold, though. They're S4, but they have Renown, and they are a huge closer in this type of deck, because every time a character with Strength 2 or lower is killed, these guys get to stand. And to attack militarily, the person's looking at your card and going, oh, I can kill my, you know, strength 2 character here or something better so they don't stand. They're going to kill the strength 2 character. He stands back up. You get to do a power challenge with them. Then your opponent attacks. You drop an incinerate, blowing up one of their little guys. He stands back up.
I like him. I don't think we have the gold to pull him out of shadows right now.
To me, he is one of those cards that everyone underestimates until they play him, and then they go, oh my god, he's so much better than I thought. He stands so much in a target burn deck.
If we do that, we need to go straight to our location base and add a whole bunch more gold.
I think we're going to want to add a whole bunch of gold anyways.
Yeah, okay, but let's do it, because right now all our golds are three, all our pots are 3 gold.
So let's add at least a Khal Drogo's Tent, 3 Temples of the Grace, and Easton Fiefdoms, giving us 4 limited locations, which is 5 limited locations, because we have a Twilight Market, right?
Yeah, why would we want an Eastern Fiefdom?
Because I mentioned Incinerate, and I think we want to run it, and that will give us a need for some influence.
See, I don't want to run Influence unless we're running Narrow Seas, and I only want to run Narrow Seas if we have things that we're actually going to use it for. Or Summer Seas, sorry. So I think that unless we're adding some more characters with a higher gold cost, which probably isn't a great idea, I'm not sure I see going for an Influence base yet.
Before we go on too far with more locations and whatnot, should we look at some burn cards and try to figure out what we can get without Influence and what we can get, you know, if we need to add more Influence?
Sure. So what do we have already? We've got King's Landing Assassin. We've got Magister Illyrio. We've got the Marine Tourney Grounds. A Flame Kiss is going to cost us gold right now unless we have Influence. The Shadow Parasite keys off burn, and then we have a threat from the north, which is sort of pseudo-burn as well. So, that's not exactly a ton of burn.
No. I think we want more burn in a burn deck, and especially if we're running the Shadow Parasites, we need something to trigger them. So, in my mind, Incinerate is just so good in this type of deck. It's surprise. We have tons of allies. We can key off them pretty easily. I really like Incinerate.
What are our other burn options? I kind of want to dig into
them. I think all of them are going to require influence. We could do Dragon Skulls. Here's the big thing that I'm worried about. If all of our burn is coming from shadow effects, we can only do one of them at the beginning of every challenge. We don't have any surprise burn. To me, that's not the greatest idea.
Yeah.
So if we were to alter and try to grab some influence, I mean, in our location base here, what would you look at dropping? I mean, would you go down to 1 King's Landing and 2 Kingdoms in the Shadows?
Well, we still got a little room in locations. We can probably go up to about 18 or so in this deck.
Yeah, I don't know if I would drop that. I would definitely take the Eastern Freedom I talked about. Maybe I would go with the location that reduces the first ally character, depending on how many other allies we add in.
But that none also of them are being influence. Played. I mean, currently we have the Shadow Parasites. They're the
Which
only
are zero
ally
cost.
That's being played, aside from Magister Illyrio.
Okay.
So,
I agree with that.
I have to look at our character base a little bit more before I set up our reducers and our way to get these into play.
All right, let's talk about more our character base then. I think we should add at least 1 or 2 Shadow Seers. 1 cost, 2 strength intrigue. We get to put cards in the shadows for free.
Yeah, do like them. They're monocons, which isn't great, but they are allies. So if we want to push the allies a little further.
I like the Khal Drogo, which bounces in when you win a challenge. That would trigger off Magister Illyrio, for instance. He's a good surprise card. I think we want to keep with our good setup, so maybe add things like Black Hatchling or Green Hatchling. I would normally go for the white, but here I wouldn't because we're running Threat from the North, and I wouldn't want to discard him on my threat turn.
I'm a bigger fan of having the Tricon anyway.
The Green Hatchling?
He's less interesting.
He's 1 for 2 strength, can block intrigue icons. He's unique.
The number of uniques we have matters a little bit for Marine Tourney Grounds, so it's a possibility. Are we going to try and run Blood Magic Rituals?
For what?
Currently it's Magister Illyrio. I mean, there's almost no one else, so I'm thinking no.
I'm thinking no. I think we probably want to run 1 or 2 Dragon Thieves.
Because you're worried about...
Crazy Giant... Yeah.
Because of Crazy Giant Barrack, yeah.
Other... Crazy giant characters. if we run into Maesters, and you said there might be a Barrow Maesters, Dragon Thief can come out, destroy their certain chain attachments, which can slow down their game plan, help you out.
Okay.
I'd probably want to run one or two.
Two Dragon Thieves. And that starts to make me more likely to want to maybe pad an influence base.
I like the Dragon Thief. I do see quite a few attachments.
If we were going to run two Illyrios, I would suggest Horseback Archers here, too.
Those are the pop-in for military defense, right?
Yeah, but only if we're going to go up to two Illyrios. Illyrio is pretty solid in this deck, actually.
He's only hitting non-uniques.
You're hoping you can burn the uniques out with your other stuff.
I think that anything that pops in is great. I mean, I'd be willing to go up to another Illyrio. I mean, what are you looking at character-wise here? Right around 30, probably?
Yeah, we'd probably be aiming for 30. Well, I just put in an Illyrio and two Horseback Archers. That would put us to 31 right now.
Okay, let's try that. So that will force influence now.
I know that we just got to 31 characters, but what about Missandei in a deck like this for the influence?
She can't be discarded.
Yep.
She's an ally? No, that's actually an excellent call.
Yep, I like her.
I like her a lot. And I don't mind going slightly higher than 30 characters here, because things that sit in shadows are still useful to us. But I think that's a reasonable character base right now, and our character is responsible for 3 King's Landing Assassins and 2 Magister Illyrios. That's 5 points of potential burn. So the character base is not hugely responsible for burn.
Right.
While Marine Turning Grounds and Dragon Pit are useful, as is Threat from the North, I think you're right in that we definitely need another terminal effect from somewhere.
So, since we're going to put some influence in, let's put in some incinerates.
All right.
3.
Yeah. If you're going to put incinerates in, you might as well put 3. They're phenomenal cards.
I'm on board with that. We got plenty of allies. We got quite a few King's cards, even though they probably won't be out.
We have a reasonable number of Dothraki, too, actually.
So it's important to note that the King's Guard won't actually help you in most cases, because they're not Targaryen, and it has to be a Targaryen character.
I forgot about that.
For incinerate. So that's going to be important for you to always keep in mind.
We do have a fair bit of Dothraki, though. Not only do we have Jogo, 3 refugees, the Horseback Archers, and Khal Drogo, so we should be able to get at least 2 or 3 out of that. We have a lot of allies. We have the Shadow Seers, Dragon Thief, Missandei, Magister Illyrio, Shadow Parasites. So I think that's really not all that bad. But sometimes you'll just need it for the terminal effect, too. So even if it's -1, the fact that the character will die if he hits 0 means that he can't attack if you have your Marine Turning Grounds out.
Right, that's exactly it. You can wait till they attack, then use it, and kill the character with Marine Turning Grounds.
Yeah.
Since we're doing events, and I don't think we want too many, because we've actually included a lot of characters we can't set up, Pyrophobia in this type of deck is so good.
Yeah, I was actually going to suggest this, because a lot of people don't like Pyrophobia, and I think it's a phenomenal card for this deck. Absolutely phenomenal.
So what people don't realize is when a character comes into play directly from the hand and it hits the table, it gets affected by the Dragon Pit and gets that -1 right away. So if it was a 3-strength character, the moment your opponent plays it, that strength is reduced to 2, and you can Pyrophobia that back to their hand. It is a huge tempo play, and it can be really big in games.
It's like a perfect to House Divided.
I've never even looked at that card, to be honest.
It essentially also allows you to hit targets that you would never be able to burn down all the way.
So, you know, someone attacks with you, big army, you can minus it with the Turning Ground, that takes their strength down to 2, and back to hand. Which is nice. And I'd like to see actually a couple Flame Kiss, I think. Another terminal effect, something else we can jump out.
We're going to be so influence starved right now.
Well, let's put in 2.
Put in some influence.
Let's put in 2 Flame Kiss, and that'll leave us, what, 5 more cards we can put in that would all be influence? This might be a case where we only run 1 Dragon Pit if it's going to start to look like we don't have enough influence, we need another location.
I mean, it depends how often you're expecting to see Rally Cry. Because you're okay if I plot 4 City Besiege, your opponent using City Besiege on you plot 4 to ditch your Dragon Pit is not going to change the game.
I agree. And here's the other thing. I only expect to see Rally Cry versus Knights of the Hollow Hill. And for Knights of the Hollow Hill, I'm not even setting up Dragon Pit. I'm setting up my Aegon's Hill.
Yeah, all right. For sure. We can drop a Dragon Pit.
So let's just run 1. Got a nice option now. We got Aegon's or Dragon Pit. It saves us another card so we can get some more influence in here. How many allies do we have now that we want to actually play from hand? I mean, we could play the Dragon Thieves from hand.
Mm-hmm.
We got the Shadow Seers, which we actually want to pay the cost of. What other allies do we have that we want to pay the cost
Missandei.
Of? Missandei. Yep, Missandei.
Is three, so that's 4, 5, and then Illyrio, 6, 7.
So it might be worth it now to include the ally reducer for influence as well.
Was that, is that Tyrosh?
Yeah.
I can never remember which one's which.
It's Tyrosh.
We're going to be influence starved for non-limited influence anyway, so yeah.
Okay.
I might even pay a gold for just the influence, and the fact that it can act as a reducer is not necessarily that bad.
Okay, and then we can, obviously, the 2-cost, 2-reducer that gives us influence, right?
Great Pyramid, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's just a great card, period. So, 3 Summer Seas, which we probably won't use to actually reduce most of the time. It's just for the 0-cost influence.
Let's make it 2 for now.
Okay.
So, another card that I haven't heard us mention, what about the Red Keep? I know it's kind of overkill with 3, but it is a Shadows card, and it's got some staying power.
I hadn't actually considered it, because I always think of it if you're running with Steros Fleas or Favorable Grounds.
I didn't consider it because of its cost, but the fact that it's King's Landing actually plays a big role to me, because I was counting our King's Landing locations, and they weren't that high. So adding another King's Landing actually has value to me as well. So I'm cool with the Red Keep now. Okay, one of.
Yeah. That gets me to 19 locations.
That's probably maybe even over my limit. And that's a total...
59 is what I'm counting.
Kind of feel like we have room for one more card. We can put something really fun in.
Okay.
I don't have anything in mind, but I'm sort of thinking this is a 59 card deck. We haven't had to cut down. I already have room for something, a pet project, a fun one.
So do you think that we have enough influence to do Forever Burning and do the Dominus trick of just recycling it?
Enough influence total? Do we have enough separate influence cards? Because, I mean, the Red Keep, for instance, is 3 influence. That's handy to drop in a Dragon Thief or whatever.
We could run a Sorrowful Man now that we have all this influence.
I actually like the Sorrowful Man.
There you go. I would put a Sorrowful Man in. I like him a lot. I like being able to pull him out of shadows with influence because it'll still trigger Illyrio and stuff if someone else is ambushing in a character, for instance. And then you can deal 2 influence and say, all right, if you don't have a gold, that ambush character dies, and I'm triggering Illyrio to get rid of another character of yours. And he's an ally, so he's helping our ally base. Yeah, let's put in Sorrowful Man.
So Sorrowful Man it is.
All right.
Deck. I think this is a reasonable deck. I have some reservations about the influence curve, but I think it's probably in the right place. The addition of Missandei was actually a good call that I wasn't thinking of.
I think we created a fun deck. I mean, I'm really glad that we went with a deck that is fun. I don't like building decks that I find are negative play experiences. I think you'll have a good time at the tournament with this, and I think the people playing you will have a good time versus it, which is, to me, important.
All right, John, so we built the deck with Jensen 22, and he had a chance to play test it. You didn't really, and I think each of us made some slightly different tweaks to it over the week after we built it. What kind of tweaks did you make to it, John?
Well, like you said, Jensen 22 had some playtesting experience, and he actually mentioned to me that he was having some influence problems. So I decided to add one more influence, like a crazy man that I am, and added a Summer Sea to bring it up to 3. And I dropped, sadly, my mercenaries to do that.
I dropped the mercenaries as well. The gold costs you can justify in a summer deck, but in this deck it was just too hard. And then I didn't worry too much about influence. I heard his concerns, and then I decided I would just cut Sorrowful Man to reduce my dependency on it a little and make sure that I still had 2 Prestons and 1 Serial 4L, because I think that those fueling draw are a pretty big deal for the deck.
Yeah, I agree. I think if I was to go back, I would definitely add a Serial and a second Preston to the deck.
And I think, well, maybe the version that we'll post will be that one then?
Sure, maybe with the extra influence.
Wait, you start 61, we'll modify 61 cards?
Go 61 and be crazy.
61? With a third Summer Sea? We're going to get so much flack for going up to 61.
Let's do it, though.
Let's do it. Okay. All right, so last time we built the deck on air, we both took it to a tournament. We both did fairly well. And I went on to win that store championship. So I recall breathing a sigh of relief because the deck that we built on air had worked. I could have imagined it choking. So you took this deck to a tournament, and so did Jensen. How'd you guys fare?
I was top seed in Swiss, so I didn't lose a game. I played against a variety of decks. I played against Stark Knight. I played against Martell Bloodthirst. I played against a Greyjoy Black Sails and Martell No Agenda. So I was happy with those games. I didn't feel out of control in any of them except for the Stark Knight, and then there was a big turnaround. And he actually went on to win the whole event later, though I didn't get to play him again because right after the cut, I lost to a Greyjoy Black Sails that basically steamrolled me from turn one. It was one of the ones that uses a lot of the increased claim effects. Didn't have a very good setup. I had a two-card setup. Didn't have any burn in my hands after I had mulliganed, and I just couldn't get going. So it was kind of sad. I think, you know, if we were to play that match 100 times, I probably split the gates really? With him. So
Greyjoy gets a pretty strong start out of the gates with some reasonably high-strength characters. It can be a bit tough to...
This particular version was running a lot of one-cost characters to have stronger setups and then some big characters. I think an early Threat from the North part, for example, can really reduce their character base. And then after that, I just have to prevent them from getting to go to their hold. So I just have to keep burning out their naval icons, basically, at that point. Also, Pyrophobia really slows down that deck. And I find that if you can keep them from getting their hold, maybe bouncing back their larger naval icons, you have a much better chance to win against it.
That sounds fair. So I sort of wanted to, before we move on to what Jensen did with his deck, did you find any major changes that you'd make or major disagreements? I know we had talked in building the deck about I was even considering not playing Valor in this meta, and of course both of you told me how crazy I was. You'd make a very strong case for March for the Wall. I was sort of interested in how the plot choices played out.
Yeah, so I used Valor in all of my matches, so it was extremely important. And March to the Wall won me the Bloodthirst game for sure, when I marched to the wall a Super Viper. That was all set up. And I think that March to the Wall also paid off in the Knights, where I marched one of the Knights so that we were equal in Knights and he got less draw. So I say overall that Marched was definitely a winner for me, and I think Valor is extremely important in this deck.
Yeah, I can see how that's the case. So did you ever set up anything but Dragon Pit?
Yeah, in the Bloodthirst match, I did set up our option for that, the Aegon's Hill, and it paid off. I removed a Viper early out of his hand, which he then, of course, shuffled back into his deck. I also removed Sergic Dane. He was running as a defensive mechanism, I guess, and a couple other characters later on. But those were the two that were most important, and I think that Aegon's Hill in that matchup was a good choice. I didn't get to play any of the Knights of the Hollow Hill. One of the things I do want to say is that I got to play again with the people from Toronto, and it's a great group of guys and girls. We actually had three female players at the tournament, so I want to give a shout-out to them because they're a great time to play with, and they're a bunch of good players.
Excellent. Glad they made the trip out. So last deck-related question. I sort of wanted to know how the location hate and whether we were underserved by that, because I felt we were a little low when we built the deck.
We were absolutely underserved with the location hate. There was a few times where I wanted to get rid of locations, and I couldn't draw into it. I would definitely drop the Sorrowful Man for probably another Warlock of Karth. But other than that, I was actually surprised with the strength of the deck. When I first looked at it and went to go play it, I was thinking, oh, this is kind of like tier 1.5, maybe at best. I didn't feel like I ran, maybe it's because I didn't run into bad matchups, but I didn't feel like I didn't have a chance in any of my matches except for the one I lost. And even then, I think that the deck could fare well. I was actually surprised at how strong the deck was in general. I played some other matches just for fun afterwards with it, and I won all those as well. I played a Lannister No Agenda. I played another burn against another burn deck, and again, I won with it. So I was happy with it. I might have just been on a roll that day.
On a roll. Not quite enough of a roll, obviously.
Yeah.
So I guess the real test of the deck is we built it for Jensen 22. We built it with Jensen 22. And so he took it to a tournament on the same day in Seattle. Do you know how he did?
Yeah, I talked to him about it a little bit. Basically, he made the cut, so to me that's a great indication that he did all right. However, he played a bunch of Bloodthirst decks that we thought, you know, at the time that we made it, that Aegon's Hill would be enough to help us counteract those types of decks. But for Jensen, it just wasn't. Too much challenge control on their side, and he ended up losing in the cut to a Bloodthirst deck. And he, I think, played three Bloodthirst decks throughout the tournament. And
that is unfortunate. I mean, the Bloodthirst deck is is not particularly fun to play against, regardless of the deck you're using.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, no, so he made top four at his tournament, which is superb for a self-proclaimed new player to come to us, discuss a deck, spend a little time chatting about it afterwards, not all of that was recorded, and then take that and top four at his local tournament, I think is fantastic.
Yeah, and he said he had fun. And he said that, you know, the night before he was practicing with his friends, he had a good time. He played some on Octagon, he had a good time. And I had a lot of fun playing this deck. And he mentioned to me that he felt like every decision you made had a big impact on the game. I felt that way as well when I played the deck, which is the type of deck I like, where I feel like all my decisions matter.
Now, this is something that's somewhat unrelated, but I think it's really neat that we wound up building that particular deck, because in the interview where we were talking with Nate, we spent a lot of time on the Shadows mechanic. And, you know, we had recorded this deck before we'd done that interview. But it's neat that, you know, last week's episode spent so much time talking on Shadows. This week's episode is going to spend so much time talking about a Shadows deck, keeping in that same theme.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we don't actually have any closing comments this time, but the last time that I cut the closing comments section because we didn't have anything to say, people all complained that the closing credits had appeared way too abruptly at the end of the cast. So, yeah. Closing
also,
credits!
Someone wrote to me and actually said that they wanted a little bit more of Alex's sexy voice, so there it is.
Lies. Spies and falsehood.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.